Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us. It's September. It feels like March. This year's marching on, so to speak. That's what I was thinking. September 24th, and we appreciate you dialing in and being a part of the broadcast. Many of you are dialing in from all over the country. We have literally tens of thousands of listeners now each and every week. We appreciate it. What an honor to be a part of your news cycle, news information cycle, and all that's going on in the mortgage industry. That's maybe the best way to say it. Be sure to check us out. Twitter is another thing we're starting to use a lot more. You can get data from there, connect with me, and follow me, David Lickin. You'll see a lot of Twitter announcements. Facebook and LinkedIn, we're using those a great deal, as well as you can use Blog Talk Radio, which is hosts our service for broadcasting each and every week. We appreciate the folks at Blog Talk Radio. Can't say that. Say that real fast. Anyway, it's good to have you with us, and we have a special guest today later on the broadcast, a little bit after we get through our normal segments, Les Parker of Parker & Company will be with us. Les is someone I've known for many, many years. Someone is just knowledgeable, studies the industry, has a great perspective. And so we're continuing with our series on politics and mortgage banking, mortgage lending, and what does it mean to these two candidates. And so Les is going to be adding some great thought, great commentary as we look at this. If you recall, we had Les Parker on another time, and we've had Les on several times, I think. And he always brings a unique perspective to the discussion, unique in the sense that he is so informed, always like his reflective knowledge that he has, a veteran of the industry and someone who has a great deal of understanding of the capital markets. So it'll be great to have him on and talking to him later. Alice Alvey is out and traveling this week, but we've got a recorded segment for her. We wish her well. Happy vacation, Alice. She's off in jolly old England, I say. So we appreciate Alice being a part of the broadcast. And Andy Schell is traveling. So Joe and I are carrying the phone lines. Joe, good to have you on the broadcast.
Good morning, Dave.
Appreciate you. Good morning. Good to have you here with us. Today, the MBS prices have risen again and again and again, all-time high. What's going on?
It's just every day. They've been going up a little bit each day, and we're back to all-time highs. Right now, the Fannie Mae 3% coupon is trading at a price of 105 and 9.30 seconds. You know, and actually, it's up to 105 and 11.30 seconds.
Wow.
Not a lot to talk to for that, other than over the weekend there was some weak economic data coming out of Germany, which seemed to hurt stocks a little bit and help mortgage-backed security prices. But it's really just more follow-through of what we've been watching. You know, I mentioned, Dave, last week on the show that we were in for a bit of a vacation after the week before with the very large amount of big market news with the Fed meeting and the big movement that occurred, and we had one more last week, and it was like it was a paid vacation for everyone, because MBS prices just kept getting better and better and better. For the week last week, we were up over a point and a quarter in prices. Now, because of the increase in G fees that are beginning to make their way into rates, it hadn't resulted in that big an increase or that much of an increase in mortgage rates, but it's nice to have seen this improvement in MBS prices at the same time the G fee increase is starting to be built in, so that the pain's not quite so bad.
That's no question that it's been one of those weeks where it's been just fun, but to see where things, how low can it go? And so is this the result of the QE3?
Yeah, and you know, what's happening is other countries are jumping on that bandwagon. You know, we saw early on the ECB announced mm-hmm. QE, the U.S. announced QE, Japan last Wednesday announced some quantitative easing, further stimulating their economy. And in all these situations, they're helping create more demand for longer-term safe assets like U.S. government mortgage-backed securities.
Right.
Last week, you know, the economic announcements were, you know, I guess you could say they were pretty weak to mixed at best. But for the housing data, it was really a good week for housing data with existing home sales rose to the highest level since May of 2010, and housing starts increased a good percentage. Building permits rose again to the highest level of early 2010, and you'll recall that was the tax credit incentive that was going on.
Right.
Builder confidence reached the highest level since 2006, so we're really seeing some positive things going on in the housing market.
Yeah, we really are. I was on Fox. For those that want to go take a look at that, you can go to the Facebook page, David, looking at Facebook, and you'll see the broadcast we did on Fox on this thing. What's really interesting to note about the housing data and existing home sales is it's very regionalized. The Northeast is very strong. That's where we've had a 7.2% increase. And then you look at out west, and it's flatlined. I mean, it's just flatlined. The rest of the country is, you know, 2% or some more, maybe at least the data that we were looking at. And it's really interesting to see how on a regionalized basis. And then one guy called in while I was right after I did the broadcast. Says, Dave, we're actually seeing an increase of building permits in Florida for condos.
Well, how about
Yeah, how about that? What's going on? That was really interesting. Let's see here. We got this week coming up.
That's a risk-on trade, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, it is a risk-on trade. Yes, for sure. Who knows how much more inventory is going on. Risk-on is right. Game on, risk-on. So anyway, well, let's talk about this week. A little busier?
Yeah, all right, we've got a few things. Consumer confidence comes out tomorrow, and then new home sales comes out on Wednesday.
Yep.
Thursday's durable orders, finals, second quarter GDP, pending home sales, and then on Friday, PCE and Chicago PMI. And then we have some shorter-term Treasury auctions on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So, you know, it's a little not the kind of week like we had 2 weeks ago, but should pay attention.
Anything in there that's some real big market movers that you see happening?
You know, with the Fed announcement, we don't. You know, they're all in. There's not a whole lot more they can do. I guess other countries like Japan could come up with a surprise, and who knows what's going to happen in Europe.
Europe, absolutely.
I read where Italy and Greece are saying that they truly want to stay in, and or maybe Spain and Greece, I don't remember which. So, you know, some feel good there, but then the realities haven't changed a bit. And so, you know, Europe could move the market in either direction at any time.
No question, we've got our all eyes in Europe, see what's going to be happening there. It's nice to see what's going on with rates, how low can they go, and where do we go from here? Joe, we appreciate it. Folks, if you are not using MBS Quoteline, you are missing out on some up-to-date, real short, sweet, to the point. It's been sweet last week, at least definitely short information sound bites that come to you. So, Joe, we appreciate you bringing us to us.
Thank you.
And if you want, appreciate it. And, folks, if you want to learn more, stay tuned for this break. You'll learn a little more about how to get signed up on MBS Quoteline. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. September 24th it is, for those of you that are downloading this and listening through the broadcast. We insert that there regularly so you know which broadcast you're listening to. Again, we appreciate so much Alice Alva being a part of the broadcast. She is off to England, but she left us with some wonderful thoughts, so let's find out what's... She's giving her legislative update. She recorded it, and she's uploaded it. Let's hear what her comments are. Thank you, Alice. Appreciate you.
Hey everyone, Alice Alvey here, and here we go again with another traffic report legislative update. Well, I just want to give you a heads up on one bill we referenced last week, but I don't want you to forget about it. We do have to watch very carefully what's going on in Congress because we do have H.R. 4264 that passed the House back on September 11th that will allow an MIP increase up to 2.05%. So this would be an increase of the annual premium. Right now, those are all in about the range of about 1.25% on an annual basis. Divide that by 12 for the monthly amount that goes in the borrower's payment. So they are moving through Congress. We still have to get through the Senate approval, and we'll see if perhaps this gets slid into some other appropriations bill or something else in Congress where we end up with the president's signature to give FHA the authority to increase that annual premium. So it's just a heads up. Get your FHA customers in now before they end up with higher premiums in the future. Also, I want to let you know that last Tuesday, we were fortunate enough at the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association that we had the CFPB speak at our event. It was great. I want to thank Rose Pickram from CFPB and Heidi White for doing such a great job. And that what they did was talk to us about the CFPB, where they're going, what their mission is, and they also ran through each one of the proposed rules and also covered a lot of FAQs. Now, I give them a lot of credit because obviously in a proposed rule stage, there's not a lot of final decisions and final answers that you can give to people. But they said, as many times as we say on this show, you must get out there and comment on these proposals because there are so many things where CFPB is clearly asking questions, and this is your chance. You know, I remember with loan officer compensation, the first round of that, people started getting up in arms after the final rule. Well, that's not the time to get upset. Get into it now. So the first one on the agenda is the loan officer compensation. That particular comment period is only open for a few more weeks. We have till October 16th. Read it very carefully and think through how will this affect my loan officers today. And most importantly is they are trying to open up the opportunity to clarify that a loan originator can participate in a 401k with a matching program and potentially in a profit sharing plan. Now, where I see the uneven playing field in the profit sharing is they're asking what percentage of revenue from the company can come from mortgage origination in order to allow a loan officer to participate in profit sharing. Well, they talk about 25% or 50%. Well, if I'm a mortgage lender, that number is always 100%. So I don't know if in the proposed rule we can talk them into 100% or not, but really what's included in that, maybe defining what other options are there potentially to make sure there is a better playing field, level playing field between lenders and banks and depositories. So check out that because there is the opportunity there to help your loan officers participate in those programs. Also, whether or not you think it's reasonable for a zero-cost option, they're truly asking that do you have most of your customers could be eligible for some type of a no-cost loan program with no upfront fees that would have to be disclosed on every transaction? Is that reasonable? Is it not reasonable? So make sure that you get out and touch on those. And also the definition of bona fide points, discount points. That's going to be an important definition in the loan officer compensation proposed rule. Another important proposed rule is the integrated mortgage disclosures for combining the good faith estimate with the initial TIL and the HUD one with the final TIL. We won't be calling it a GFE anymore. We'll be calling it a loan estimate. I've called it a GFE for 30 years. It won't be a HUD 1 anymore. It's going to be a settlement statement. Oh, my gosh, I've called it a HUD 1 for that. Well, I guess it makes sense. HUD isn't overseeing the regulation anymore, so CFPB is going to give it its own name. In any case, our new disclosures, they're long, but they actually save some paper when you listen to the CFPB talk about it. I go, wow, I didn't really think about that. The GFE is going to turn into 5 pages, but it's incorporating the appraisal notices and the servicing notices. So it actually saves two other pieces of paper. Woohoo! Efficiency, right? So what I want to make sure that you're aware of as you look at the new combined disclosures is we have the issue of tolerances discussed in there. They are proposing to change the 10% tolerance to include recording fees as being a zero tolerance field, and that fees paid to affiliates would also be zero tolerance. You really need to comment on those of you with affiliates in particular. If an affiliate title company, for example, would I be able to get that fee exact? How can I get that fee exact? And recording fees, I know we get pretty close, but can it be a zero tolerance field? Is it reasonable to know that up front? Is it a change in circumstance then? I change from a fixed to an arm. Well, now I'm going to have a higher recording fee. So it sounds like on the surface it should be easy enough to be able to redisclose and correct that number, but we got to make sure. You've got to think through your real scenarios to see what the impact of these tolerance changes could mean. That rule is very long because it goes line by line through each one of the forms. Don't let that scare you. Take a look at the beginning parts of it for the substance of it. Look at the way the forms are laid out at the very least so that you can get at least an impression right now on whether or not you believe the forms are clear enough for consumers. Another main component in the proposed rule process is the concept of changing the APR calculation to be an all-in APR. Now, this is part of the rule for the combined GFE and initial till and HUD and till disclosures. In there, they talk about, does it make sense to show a customer an all-in APR? All my closing costs and fees are in there. No longer trying to go, well, this is an include and this is an exclude fee. Does that make sense? And you know what's great? The CFPB even admitted in their presentation, they're going, we know the customers don't understand the till as it stands now. So even we aren't sure. If you change the calculation, does that mean they can all of a sudden understand it? We thought, wow, that was great because we're thinking the same thing. So take a look at that. Does it make sense to you operationally? Maybe operationally you think it is some relief. If I just have to pull it all in and put every fee in there, does that make my disclosures easier to produce? Does that mean I'm less susceptible to compliance problems? So think about that side of it as well as you look at not just the impact to the consumer, but the impact to you operationally as well. There are two other proposed rules to make sure that you're aware of. I want to give you a few more details on. Under the ECOA appraisal requirements proposal, this comment period is open until 10/15/12. What you've got to be aware of in this is it opens up the door for us to have to give a consumer every valuation appraisal form that we produce in the loan decision, and they even reference having to give the customer an AVM. Well, how do you define an automated valuation model? I mean, there are so many different tools that we use to find other data that might have been used by the appraiser, different services out there that are supplemental appraisal information. That needs to be clearly defined. We don't want that we're giving customers information that's just confusing. I mean, if we give them something that has a whole list of all the homes that sold in the area and all the listings in the area, is that helpful to a consumer? No, it just causes more confusion. They don't understand why those weren't picked as comparables. So dig into the wording. We're still going to be doing some of that, but as you interpret it, right, because when every one of us read these, we all read things a little bit differently. When you read it, does it appear that we're going to have to give everything to consumers? Is an AVM, is your version of an AVM something that's clear to a consumer, or is it better to just not have to give it to them? Is it more confusing? Oh, I forgot to mention something. Don't forget also, in the GFE and HUD-1 proposed rule is the statement to say we would have to give HUD-1s to customers 3 days ahead of closing. Now, that's laughable. Everybody in the room laughed when we brought that up talking compliance recently because they're going, we can barely get them there the day of the closing, let alone 3 days. How does that change the dynamic for consumers? Is that a benefit? is it even possible to try and pull that together? You know, make sure that you're giving that information to the CFPB so they understand, you know, is it going to be something that the industry can live up to, and that's get HUD once done 3 days ahead of time. Is the liability clear, right? Because we might have done everything right, but we're waiting on a title company or a closing agent to get us the final version of the HUD. Which version of the HUD has to be 3 days? Just the one that's the lender side of the transaction, or does it have to be the final, as we say? So all of that you should make comments on to make sure that you understand it's clear and the implication to your operation. Last but not least is the high-risk mortgage appraisals. Here's what I'm concerned about in this rule. The comment period's open till October 15th on this one. Here's what it states. We're going to use the standard HPML definition of 1.5%. And by the way, that won't be using the all-in APR, at least what we can read for now. That will be using our current calculations. But here's what it says. If the property was owned by the seller less than 180 days, and I have an HPML loan, which is my APR is 1.5% above the average prime offered rate, and the seller paid less for the house than the new sale price, a second appraisal is required at no cost to the buyer. Now, the CFPB is looking for comments on what is that sale price threshold? How much could a property sale price have increased in value in a six-month period? Well, my answer is that depends, right? Where do you live? Are you in Michigan? Are you in Texas? Are you in California? Are you in the Carolinas? Everybody is completely different on what is a reasonable appreciation. So we've got to make sure we all comment, because we don't need to see that it's only a 5% increase in 6 months. Is it a 50% increase? How about we go with FHA? FHA says if it doubles, then we have to get a new appraisal. I'm fine with doubling, because in any market in 6 months, that's a huge increase where it should be mandatory to get a second appraisal and see what's going on. But anything less than that starts to be expensive. Here's the challenge for us as lenders. If we get this wrong, if we make a mistake, there's a $2,000 fine payable to the borrower if a violation occurs. They've got the fine already written into this proposed rule. So let's make sure that threshold is reasonable. By the way, qualified mortgages, when they get defined, would be exempt from this. But, you know, let's work with this rule right now as if we, or proposed rule, by the way, let's work with it now as if it might apply to all of our business today. So that's my 2 cents on a couple of the proposed rules that are pending right now. The Mortgage Bankers Association has published a comment out there, too, I believe. So go ahead and take a look at what they have said if you're looking for some ways to phrase things. And that's my report for today, Dave. So thank you very much, and I'll be talking with you all in 2 weeks. Take care.
Alice, appreciate you being with us each and every week. So much of work goes into preparing her comments, and so it's a special thank you to her and her staff for all that they do to keep us current on all that's going on. We appreciate it. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource, used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back. Again, it's September 24th for those of you that are listening online on a downloaded basis. By the way, you can do that. You can do that many, many ways. You can listen, download it right from the Blog Talk Radio website, or you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it and just have it downloaded, whatever your favorite listening device is. The Profit Doctor is traveling again today. He's out providing surgery somewhere, financial surgery somewhere. Andy Schell, our beloved Profit Doctor, isn't with us today, but we appreciate you being on the broadcast as well. By the way, he is doing the third in a series of accounting webinars through Campus MBA. It's been very well received. A lot of great data there. I mean, as you know, listening to Andy,
if you've ever been to one of these webinars, they get really detailed, get into it. It's excellent material. You should be a part of it. You should be checking out all of Campus MBA's material. They got some great webinars. Let's jump over and talk to our technology expert, Tony Garitano. Good to have you on the broadcast, Tony. How are you doing?
Hey, Dave. How are you, my friend? I am doing well.
Good. Well, you've got a big event coming up here in Chicago, the Engage event. I'm excited to be a part of it. Alice and I are both speaking at it. I'm very excited to be there with you. Again, real quick, real brief, I want to get into some questions here, but real brief, what tell our listeners about that and how they can learn more.
Well, we're excited to have both yourself and Alice as speakers. We're going to be talking about how to transform the mortgage space for the better. It starts on Sunday, October 21st in Chicago, Illinois. It's between 2 and 4 Eastern time, Chicago time, which is not Eastern time,
Chicago time, Central time, yep.
So if you're there, you know, while you're at the MBA annual, we would encourage as many people to stop by and talk about how we can make the process better. You can get more information on progressinlending.com and RSVP. Attendance is free. All are welcome.
Let's appreciate that. Let's get into the talking about the results of these two candidates. Which candidate, let's go, here's a big question for you. Which presidential candidate would be best for lenders from a technology perspective? What do you think?
You know, I was thinking about this, Dave, you know, because it's kind of akin to me giving out an endorsement. We started this kind of general conversation last week, and I thought, well, you know, I really got to pick one at some point. So, of course, the bigger issue for me is that neither of them have a technology strategy detailed.
Right, right.
But less a mortgage strategy, really, in detail.
But anyway, any insights?
My thinking, Dave, is that lenders have a lot of older, antiquated technology that is going to need updating in order to comply with sweeping change that is probably going to hit us no matter who gets into the White House. So based on the current president's reaction to change and the fact that he has not shown that he wants to involve the mortgage space in particular in his decision-making process, I think that the better candidate would be the Republican candidate because he is
Governor Romney.
He's more business-friendly. He realizes that he has to involve the business community in his decisions, and he genuinely wants the business community to thrive. I think that the president is more concerned with the borrower, which is fine, but you can't go overboard and alienate the business community because they're the ones that are going to be offering up the mortgages.
Yeah.
So they have to be a part of the process, and they need someone who is willing to listen to them, who is willing to also give them time to comply. A lot of these deadlines have been very forced and quick, which I think has been a big source of pain and suffering for lenders. So I think that the Republican candidate would also be more mindful of that as well.
Well, Tony, I know the Romney campaign is rushing to the presses right now.
My recommendation and or endorsement will get them all of one vote.
Right. But let me ask, it's a close race, as we all know, and so in light of not having a clear front runner or just being prudent, what would you suggest people do to prepare for life after this next election, regardless of who wins?
Well, I think that the directives given by the FHFA to embrace a more data-driven process, whether it be appraisals or loan delivery, is or should be a really big lesson for lenders, Joe. If you can adapt your technology and your business processes to accommodate a more data-driven and data-validated mortgage, then the government can put as many changes or new forms at you, and you can still adapt very quickly. The problem with the lending industry is that we rely too much on forms, and I think the FHFA is trying to get us off of that habit, addiction, whatever you want to call it.
Yep,
and
for sure.
The sooner that we knock that habit, the better off we'll be, regardless of who's in the White House or what investors may decide to re-enter the mortgage space at some point in the future.
Tony, well, appreciate you taking. Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, who knows what next request might come from the CFPB that you need to have to defend yourself from some allegation. And boy, having it data will sure make it easier to get.
It will. Tony?
I certainly agree. I think that the problem is that the technology is older, and lenders have to really press their vendors to be more data-driven themselves. And once that technology becomes available, and it is at select vendors today, I think if the industry truly gets behind it, everybody will find that it's a better mortgage process, that it doesn't necessarily matter what the government does to us. We can accommodate new investor guidelines. We can accommodate new state guidelines, new federal guidelines, without, you know, losing our hair or becoming 100% gray and or bald.
Tony, appreciate you being a part of the broadcast each and every one, bringing us your thoughts. Look forward to having you back next week, and greet everybody there. Look forward to seeing you at the Engage event here shortly. Tony, have a great week. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
Thank you.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us. We have a special guest. One of the joys we have with this broadcast, we get to interview so many top mortgage professionals out there, and our next guest is no exception to that long list of wonderful guests and top mortgage professionals. His name is Les Parker. He's a certified mortgage banker. In fact, he got his certification at the young age of 29. Not surprising. In fact, he became a master CMB. Certified mortgage banker back at 29. So he's been around for a long time, one of the guys that I have enjoyed getting to know for many, many, many years. Entered into some wonderful debates with Les over the years, and we appreciate him taking the time to be with us on the broadcast today. Les is the president of Parker & Company and works on a number of areas of pipeline risk management, various other accounting budgeting tools for mortgage servicing rights, branch production. I mean, he has a host of services. Les, we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be here on the broadcast with us. Are you hearing us, and are you allowed to
hear? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dave. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and I appreciate what you're doing, a great service to our industry by having this hourly, weekly show.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. A lot goes into it, and it's a joy to do it. It's actually a labor of love. It's not something, like you say, find something you enjoy doing it, and you never work another day in your life. We enjoy doing this and bringing information, but thank you for those kind words. Les, you too have been out there making a lot of comments, and you speak across the industry on numerous issues across the board, way beyond. I mean, you're just one of the go-to guys. A lot of people want to find out what their thinking is. And since 2007, you've been talking a lot about the need for a new housing finance model to restore investor confidence. Do you see either of these presidential candidates offering such a model?
Well, I wish I could say yes, but really neither one is. What I thought, though, is that Tony's comments were spot on. Neither candidate is offering anything really detailed neither candidate is projecting a new housing finance model. But you really have to look then at what the principles are and also some indication of where they may be right now. For instance, President Obama is very dissatisfied with our temporary director, Ed DeMarco. So I think the odds of him being around for a second Obama term would be low.
But and by the way, and I'd love to get your thoughts on that, because I think DeMarco is a hero. I think what he's doing, way he stood up under intense pressure, is just nothing less than astounding and a great example of what really great stewardship of a probably not such a popular job is. I mean, your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think he's brought some real leadership to our industry. I've been very thankful for it. In fact, Tony was commenting about the technology side. Ed DeMarco has been really driving that with the GSEs, mm-hmm. as to move us away from the historical model with the GSEs of that performance will determine whether or not we come after you for a buyback. That's when it's been historically. Before the financial crisis, if a loan performed, it really didn't matter how it was manufactured. And for that matter, it really didn't matter how it was underwritten, except for the cases of fraud and all, essentially, or some type of major failure to conform with the eligibility requirements. It basically was allowed to stay in place. That has changed. And whether we have a President Obama for a second term or we have Mitt Romney as the next president of the United States, that will not change. We are on that path. And the path basically is one of manufacturing loans rather than merely having reps and warrants. So reps and warrants are passe. We're moving away from that. The memorandum that came out from FIFA, the FHFA, and Ed DeMarco's group on September 11th made it very clear that there's a way to get rep and warrant relief, basically through performance, a three-year performance. However, there was a major caveat to that, and I think people may have missed it, and that is provided you have good quality control and quality assurance. That was not by coincidence that tied to that memorandum by a link you could click, that Fannie Mae made their announcement of QA and QC process changes. So we are moving away from reps and warrant model to everything has to be validated.
Well, and that is encouraging, but those provisos are the ones that can come back and get you. Let's get over to talk about housing costs. Maybe different when you look at the two candidates. How do you see housing costs being impacted by Governor Romney becoming president or a second term of President Obama?
You know, Dave, that actually may be one of the key issues. I think it's a good question. It really depends on what the meaning of cost is. If you consider the risk to the taxpayer, the higher borrowing costs to those without government transfer payments via subsidized rates, and the reduction of regulatory burden on financial institutions due to the 2,319 pages of Dodd-Frank, then Romney's plan contains costs relatively better. And it also ends up with a benefit of fairness to more people. That's really the key.
How many pages? 2,319 pages? I mean, are they
that's
done?
That's right.
Not even.
That's the Dodd-Frank bill. And I mean, how many people have read a 2,319-page novel? I mean, I don't even know if we were in pieces that long. So that doesn't include all the new regulations, which currently, one third of the way through Dodd-Frank, and according to the ABA, the American Bankers Association, currently the new regulations surrounding this 2,300 pages is 9,000 pages.
Wow.
Now, that's the thing that the Mitt Romney campaign, though they have not given a lot of details, that is one area where they said, we will pare back regulation.
Les, this is Joe. Regarding the government's involvement in things, the guarantee seems to be the biggest, and I know it's a huge percentage of what we do now. One of our listeners emailed to say, yeah, but I heard that Romney is targeted or has considered HUD as a place to look for cost savings in trying to balance the budget. So how do you see the two candidates as it relates to future origination activity, given that one or the other might have more or less in a desire to guarantee loans?
You know, I think that's another very good question. You guys are throwing some good ones my way. The one thing that is the same between the candidates is that anything that's been coming from President Obama or when there's been talking concerning the white paper that was just released by the Romney campaign on September 22nd, with really, really without much detail. But what's consistent between both of them is that they want to reduce the amount of government involvement. Now, you might say, well, you mean even Obama would want to reduce the amount of government involvement? Well, that's what they say. So the issue really is going to be, how do you go about doing that? And I think one of the reasons that both candidates have been somewhat less, well, there's been more come out of President Obama. They've actually had a white paper they published, I think, last year on the subject, but it still wasn't the type of specificity that we need in our industry. The principle is this: are we going to go through a open and transparent process to change this housing finance model? And I do believe under a Mitt Romney administration, we would get more of that than what we have gotten under President Obama's administration. He has proven that he really does not look to build consensus. He'd much rather say, this is the way I want it to be. We aren't a dictatorship in the United States. We really are built by consensus, and we do need to listen to the voice of the people from all angles and then try to see, how do we build consensus? Where do we find the majority? I think that's what we're going to do. In terms of more directly addressing your issue, I personally do not believe that reducing government guarantees or government involvement in mortgage space means that we reduce liquidity. I do know that there are a number that think that, and if so, then they would probably be very content with just keeping things at 90% guaranteed by the government right now. But just think about that. Isn't that essentially a housing finance market owned by the government?
Right. And with that,
is that
comes
really
a...
what we want?
Yeah.
Is that really what we want? I mean, we have, and think about it, that means then that the taxpayer is on the hook for everything being done by Fannie, Freddie, and HUD, and VA, and the various land agencies that we have for advancing funds on housing. And like I said on one of my comments earlier, is that we have the government transferring payments by subsidized rates. That's what's currently going on. So can we still promote liquidity and have less government involvement? Personally, I'd like to see as little as possible. There's others that would like to see as much as possible. It turns out we will probably end up with some type of government involvement like we had before in the terms of percentages, but not in the terms of the structure. Just to give you a sense of percentages, we had basically in 2000, before the crisis and before a lot of the other problems that we were having beginning to happen in this industry, Fannie and Freddie represented 40% of the mortgages guaranteed in the United States. Ginnie Mae, 20%. Non-agency securities, 24%. And portfolios, 16%. So essentially, you had government involvement in 60%, and then 40% was non-government involvement. Today, Fannie and Freddie are at 60%, Jenny's at 30%, non-agency 6%, and portfolio is 4%. So that's a 50% increase in government involvement. and a 75% decrease in non-government involvement.
As a result, we're all addicted, you know, and it's going to be difficult to get off that addiction. So can it stay this way, or how, you know, what's going to happen?
Isn't that a good question? Can it stay this way? I would say absolutely not. Is it really appropriate for businesses and consumers to be working on deleveraging and governments not deleveraging? Now, some people will say that leverage should be somewhat like a bicycle, that if one's deleveraging, somebody else could be leveraging. However, essentially the leverage that was going on in the private sector, whether it's with business or whether it was with the consumer, was added to by governments also leveraging. So we actually had all three leveraging at the same time, which has created this debt bubble across the world, not just in the United States. I mean, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain, those countries are highly leveraged. And now we see their debt ratios, that is their amount of leverage compared to their GDP, being way out of whack. Well, the United States now is even moving that way. France has certainly moved that way. We have Germany has been a stellar credit, and yet they have some issues now simply because they're trying to carry all of Europe and keeping the EMU together. So you can't have the government guaranteeing everything. I look at this and think the model, we're almost going back to an old model of keeping rates stable. We're keeping rates at a single level, and that means it's kind of like administrative rates. Well, do administrative rates do anything? Go back to the Nixon years when they were trying to control inflation. Well, why don't we just pass a law that says inflation will only be X? Well, that's essentially what we have right now, with the government fully guaranteed, 90% of the market being guaranteed by the government, and we have the Federal Reserve buying about half of all that production, that we are essentially trying to keep interest rates, that we being the United States government, trying to keep interest rates stable or lower, and in the end, that model will fall apart.
Right. Well, and then it gets back to another level of, you know, credit quality and underwriting guidelines, and it sure seems as though correspondents are increasing the amount of underwriting guidelines even above those of the agencies, and why would they be doing that if their outlet's the agency for 90% of the loans?
Well, I think it's because of the uncertainty of GSE policy and fear over pending regulation. The CFPB mortgage disclosures took 18 months to develop, and it has an 1,100-page guide. The CFPB believes that the real problem in real estate lending is restoring trust in the mortgage market, but they don't believe in restoring trust to the investor. They believe in restoring trust to the borrower, and Tony alluded to that.
That's the truth. Yeah.
How have you seen borrowers not borrowing because they didn't trust their lender? I mean, it's kind of absurd. Just because confidence in lenders is not down, doesn't mean that that borrowers don't borrow. The borrowing depends on having a job. So we've got to. Then that's one of the reasons why I think Mitt Romney's policy will probably end up being better, because they are a little more job-focused, they're business-friendly, they want to reduce some of this regulation. We need to get the CFPB out of our life regardless.
And there's no question about that, Les. And you recently spoke on this subject in Rhode Island, Newport, Rhode Island, at the New England Mortgage Bankers Conference. And so tell us, how in the world do we get out of this mess?
Well, I think we need to look at things from the perspective of the investor. What do investors need to have confidence in buying mortgages? They need to have greater reliability, accountability, and transparency throughout the life cycle of the mortgage. That's the answer. Investors will keep the loans that they buy if they can rely on the quality. They just basically can't rely on the reps and warrants anymore. They are, you know, in a sense, they're all from Missouri. They believe in show me. Show me the quality. And so that's
true,
what they want. They want to validate data In fact, Tony talked about this too. You need to validate data, validate compliance, and validate eligibility criteria.
There's no question about this. If you look at where we're at and what the GSE requirements are, how do you see those changing? Is, you know, under the direction of DeMarco at the FIFA, you know, any changing there?
If you're referring to, like, for the quality and where those changes are, they basically, the key is that you have to prove it. So therefore, they're saying, everybody in the game now has to start proving that they really originate good loans. Just because you say you originate good loans isn't good enough. You actually have to prove that you originate good loans. And the way you do that, and a lot of lenders don't want to hear this, but we're going to have to move to this model of manufacturing. It is not impossible to produce a perfect loan. I know people think it is, but it's not, because they don't think the technology is out there. They, in fact, the technology is out there, and Tony alluded to it. But there's only one firm that I'm privileged to be able to represent, Aclaro, that they actually do have the best technology to try and address these items. And I think others, there'll be competition. But right now, they're just so far ahead. The FIFMA, Fannie, Freddie are saying that the lender needs to do more. The borrower and their loan officers expect effective and fast closing, yet compliance demands are growing. So how do they do it? Well, Dave, why don't we listen to Gary Cotribo, the spokesman of Aclaro, share some of his reasons why Aclaro can guarantee, listen to this, guarantee 30-day turnarounds for QC audits and 24-hour turnarounds for pre-closing audits required by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Thank you, Les. Timing in quality control today is absolutely critical. Unfortunately, most clients of traditional quality control firms wait 2 or even 3 months for QC results. Add pre-funding quality control, and timing is even more important. Now, there's a borrower waiting to close. Aclaro's award-winning technology is intuitive, quickly finding defects in loan data and documents, and shows trends using powerful business intelligence and data analytics. Bottom line, Aclaro guarantees your QC results in 30 days and your pre-funding audits in 24 hours. Even better, Aclaro's reporting is on-demand and dynamic, giving you instant access to critical data. It's no wonder that Aclaro is the fastest-growing QC company in the industry. Our solutions are fast, inexpensive, and incredibly effective.
Les, he's representing that he's doing these in 30 days. Is that even possible? I don't know of any QC firm out there doing things in 30 days or less.
Yes, absolutely. It's because they have double the capacity as compared to the industry. The industry right now is running 60 to 90 days, and you're supposed to turn them in 60 days under the compliance regulations. But they're going out 90 days, some even out 120 days. For QC audits, we're not even talking about trying to integrate it into process, just for QC audits. Aclaro has double the capacity of their auditors than what anybody else in the industry has. That's the reason why they're able to guarantee a 30-day turnaround. And because Aclaro's product is a black box, that is, it's available for, private label ability, you can have other institutions that do these things internally, they can get those same type of pickups. And we've dialogued with them. They're everybody is behind right now because of the increase in compliance, the increase of the number of checks they have to go through. And yet Aclaro can do it faster because of the technology. Just to give you an idea, Dave, they can actually, if you do like QC or QA audits with them, most of the industry out there can't even turn those around. It takes them a few days. Aclaro does it in 24 hours or less.
Wow.
So you can actually still close the loans.
That is quite astounding in this market to have that kind of turnaround. Yeah, I mean, that's quite astounding. I mean, there's so much burn. It goes back to the whole thing, what you're saying is it's the show me, prove it, and doing it in a timely manner. I'm looking at the clock here. We have literally less than five minutes left on the broadcast. You know, how is the impact of FIFA reps and warrants relief announced in September?
Well, that's isn't that interesting? They announced it on 9/11.
Any significance to that date?
Yeah, I don't know. I did find it. I just found it interesting. I guess we're going to always remember that. And I certainly remember that day. But the real significant in the impact is that at the same time, Fannie Mae announced the quality process. But in the rep and warrants, there were a number of items in there of what they have to do. It says you have to find defects is one thing that they that's finding the defects is quite one thing as actually implementing process. And one thing
right.
that made clear in the memorandum from Fannie Mae is that if you just go through this as a form where you do your QC audits or you do even some QA items where your QA is quality assurance, the upfront type of things you do just before a loan closes. If you have findings and then you just file them and you don't act on them,
that is
the worst thing you can do. And they're saying you have to have not just have QA in place, not just have QC in place, not just have it properly sampled and going to deep enough dives, but you also have to do what those findings find. And that process change is what's really hard. You've got to get branch managers and loan officers and all the people in production to begin to understand these issues have to be addressed. And I understand that they're wanting to advocate for the consumer. They want to be able to get loans processed quickly. And in a certain sense, we all don't get paid unless they get processed quickly. But they also have to be processed right.
Yeah, there's no question that we're seeing, you know, DeMarco and his whole focus is on really, you know, zeroing in on quality across the board. And Tony's been talking about the need of technology and how the data standards have got to just get tightened up. Talk about, you mentioned just a minute ago about it going all the way through the organization. When someone is looking at these reports, a lot of people, Les, you and I have been around for a long time, these QC reports, it's the, yeah, you know, it's that, got to do it. It's the comply to, you know, it's a checklist. Check it off, and then we put it away. How, when you said it goes all the way down to the production organization, explain that a little bit.
Well, for actually changing process, that means you've got to get into the processor's hands. You've got to get into who's ever taking the applications, whether it's an in-house LO or an outside LO. But that's really where the contact is with the consumer. And most of the time you address these issues up front. Just to give you an idea, sometimes you'll find that a loan officer may be regularly signing something as a convenience for their consumers oftentimes, but really
right.
they're not supposed to be signing any of these disclosures. Well, if you find that a loan officer is regularly doing it, then that needs to get to the branch manager or whoever the supervisor is and to that loan officer. They can and be explained that, you know, I understand you're trying to help the consumer, but we need to have it manufactured properly, because if it's not, we can suffer fines. We can end up having to buy back these loans, because now the GSEs
yeah.
are moving away from the model of just performance to the model of it has to be done right.
I know you also deal a lot in buybacks. What are the top reasons why companies are facing buybacks?
You know, I wish I had a top 10 so we can go back backwards, and I had a really funny one as the top one, but I will read them backwards for you. Now, this was just from the Aclaro list.
And we have less than about 40 seconds. We got to get this through
okay.
this part of
There's
it.
There's misrepresentation. There's of employment or income, there's unsupported property values, underwriting errors, loans closed, non-compliant. But the number one thing is for early payment defaults.
Even
you know
that,
what?
That is
a... We just need to have the whole life cycle of these loans have to be geared to quality. And I am thankful to represent Aclaro, but everyone has to get out there and start working to make good loans and do them right.
You know what? We've been talking to a lot of QC people over the years, and we're looking at at how this process has been ignored. I can't ignore it anymore, folks. We appreciate you, Les, taking the time to be with us on this broadcast. And the drums are sounding, so it tells us we're going to go to the window. Appreciate it. And folks, would stay tuned or tune in next week. We've got Jay Brinkman talking about the MBA model, what they're recommending as an alternative to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Appreciate you being with us, Les Parker. Have a blessed day, everybody. And tune in next week to Jay Brinkman, and that segment should be really interesting. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.